Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Russell Findlay spent decades taking on the most dangerous men in Scotland's criminal underworld. And then, 2 days before Christmas, 2015, he himself became the target of an unprecedented attack. Let's find out the story about this. And Russell, I'm delighted to say, joins us now. Good morning, Russell.
Good morning and happy Valentine's Day.
I thought you'd have appreciated the John Martin song there, being a Scot.
I was very touched, yes.
I knew you would. I hope you got the flowers.
Yes.
Now, Russell, there are many types of journalists in the world. I mean, some have a happy life just covering dog shows and things of that nature, but not your career, I guess.
Well, yeah, it's nothing like the journalists in parts of the world where there's everyday danger, not just from criminals and the like, but from the state. So I can't, you know, compare myself to that or the type of journalists that are in war zones doing incredible work.
Sure.
But it's domestic journalism. It does deal with organised crime, which, of course, does have its dangers. You don't take it on lightly or flippantly, but at the same time, I think in most Western European countries, organised crime doesn't tend to target journalists. I think they're probably a bit too sensible for that. They do realise it would be detrimental to their bottom line in that it would bring attention from the authorities.
Mm.
So, yeah, that's the kind of thing.
I was born and brought up for most of my life in Glasgow, and you chosen your particular kind of home territory to do this on, Scotland's criminal underworld. And, I mean, they're hard men, aren't they, basically? Really hard men.
Well, I disagree. I think they're...
That's very interesting.
Yeah,
go on.
Yeah, I think there is a tendency in some newspapers to call them hard men, almost this strange... admiring tone to it.
Yeah.
But, you know, these people are cowards. The guy that came to my door was disguised as a postman. He was armed with acid and a knife, and he did so in a family home where a child was present.
Mm.
You know, this is sneaky, it's cowardly. They're not hard. The person that sent him is a millionaire who would run a mile from a direct confrontation, but he... in fact, is in prison for domestic violence. So if the definition of a hard man is someone that beats up women, then yes, but I strongly disagree.
Yeah, it's interesting. You make a valid point. Well, let's talk about some of the thing, the work that you did. I mean, you know, the press will say that many organised crime clans were unmasked by you and your colleagues at the Sunday Mail and the Scottish Sun. So when they say unmasked, I guess we're talking about bringing their crimes to light and then having them convicted eventually, I suppose, are we?
Well, not necessarily convicted, but quite often what happened, I think, there was a bit of a sea change in the early 2000s. There had been a fairly two-dimensional reporting of crime. The terms organised crime, the terms money laundering weren't really in wide circulation from the media or the authorities. And I think what we did is we recognised there was a more sophisticated and insidious organised crime landscape in Scotland than has otherwise been reported, and there were a whole load of people involved in that, some of them outright criminals and some of them involved in the legal world or other areas such as politics where the organised crime does try and infiltrate and manipulate. So we would, you know, between myself and my colleagues, we did identify and bring into the public domain a lot of these individuals, but not on their terms. That's another crucial thing. There are some criminals, like, for example, the Lyons family, who have got a foothold in Spain. They routinely attempt to manipulate their coverage in Scotland and the newspapers in a positive way. Mm. Other criminals do the same, but what we tried to do was look at their businesses, look at their property interests, their front men, and you know, in some ways that would cause disruption. And then also, I think, when individuals are in newspapers, there was one guy who owned a garage, a filling station, and his fuel was the cheapest in the UK. Mm-hmm. So that became subject of a news story, which then, it seems, became the catalyst for a significant proceeds of crime investigation. Mm. So I think the publicity does influence the police and the Crown to some extent.
That's interesting, and that's something which is important when we talk about your specific case in just a moment. But were there ever any attempts on you or any of your colleagues in before the event we're going to discuss, you know, any kind of physical violence carried out or potentially threatened, I guess?
Not against me. There was an occasion about 15 or so years ago where the police warned me that they had intelligence that there may be a threat against me. Mm. There have been incidents that have not been reported or not widely reported recently where there's an independent news magazine in Glasgow called The Digger, mm-hmm. which does a lot of organised crime stuff, and their distribution drivers, just a matter of weeks ago, were targeted by men trying to go. These distribution drivers are ordinary guys doing a job delivering a publication, and they were attacked by what appears to be organised crime. There was another incident prior to mine in which a journalist was trying to negotiate a story involving a criminal, and that turned sour and he was stabbed. That didn't really get no publicity. But by and large, I think there's not really a pattern. I wouldn't say there's an increase in these types of things. I think they're unusual because their rarity, you know.
And so here we are then, 2 days before Christmas 2015. You're sitting at home, the door goes, and there is somebody there who allegedly is a postman, dressed up as a postman, and tell us exactly what happened next.
Yeah, well, he'd gone to great lengths. He'd a getaway driver in the vicinity. They'd been on a dummy run the day before.
Wow.
It just so happens they were subject of police surveillance in the days prior to the attack. The police surveillance team was outside their property at the time the attack on me was taking place. So that's quite a big what if, you know, if the surveillance team had been in place prior to the attack, they would have been tracked coming to my home.
Yeah,
may even have been averted, who knows, but that was something I learned during the trial. But what happened was, saw the red kind of shape of a Royal Mail jacket, partially opened the door because I am quite cautious about unexpected people at the door.
And is this in a house or a block of flats? Because you're in the west end of Glasgow, and it's a lot of flats there.
Yeah, there's a lot of flats. It's a main door property.
Right. Yeah.
So it's onto a small sort of driveway section in the street.
Right.
Opened the door partially. He said, Royal Mail delivery, something along those lines. Got me to pass through a Royal Mail card, which to sign. As I did so, I felt this liquid splashing hard kind of into the right-hand side of my face as I was turned to the side. This was followed immediately by the glass bottle which had contained the liquid. Then the man himself came through the door, and it's, I think, pure instinct takes over. You just know that this is extremely wrong. Every part of you is telling you that. He crashed through the door to me. I managed to push him back out. We both kind of tripped on the way out the door. He landed on top of me quite quickly. He was trying to escape. In the book I've written, I think I describe it as he's trying to kind of slip his jacket off like a snake shedding its skin. And by this point, I'm on top of him. My daughter comes downstairs to see this. She's 10 years old.
No.
She's very bravely alerts the neighbours. A neighbour comes out and helps pin the guy's hands down. Another neighbour then fetches some water, which was probably the difference between not losing my sight and not being scarred for life, because the application of water so quickly and with such a lot of water almost certainly, you know, saved me from those life-changing injuries.
Wow.
Because this sulfuric acid is, as I later discovered, the sulfuric acid is strong stuff. The radiator in the hall, you know, the thick white enamel paint was completely dissolved to the bare metal. So it's had I not had, and then what happened? Sorry to go off a tangent.
No, no problem.
He was the police arrived. He was taken into custody in a van, and the police officer asked me to show him what had occurred, and I pointed to the front door and I was explaining it, and that's when I saw a knife across the threshold. Yeah. So as he'd come through the door, clearly the intent was to then stab me. So you do think, had he done so, he could have either been dead, or indeed you could have been so badly injured that any medical treatment would have been focusing on fixing the knife injury, and therefore the eye and the skin would have continued to burn, perhaps.
So, sure. And was there any lasting damage on your face? I'm guessing there must have been.
No. I mean, the photos from the aftermath, you would have assumed that would be the case. Mm. A police officer who dealt with me on the day thought I was going to be blind because of the extremely traumatic injury to the eye, but it all healed up, very fortunately.
Here's a kind of crucial question. What did he say, if anything, during the attack?
Well, he said nothing at the outset. It was just actions, you know. When I was on top of him, it was for about 10 minutes I was on top of him.
And God.
My only regret, and I perhaps shouldn't say this, was I didn't maybe be a bit more robust in my revenge, because he'd come to do serious damage, and I wish I'd perhaps done more, but I was asking him what he put in my eye, and he was saying things like, I don't know what you're talking about. I said, asked him who he was, he wouldn't tell me. I asked him who he was working for, who'd sent him. He was saying stupid things like, I don't know what you're talking about, I'm just going for a walk, and I'm a postman, and all this stuff. I don't know if that was for the benefit of the ever-increasing gathering of neighbours, or perhaps it was his early attempt to come up with a story for court, but it was just ludicrous, and it was only the next day that I discovered his identity, and he was a very dangerous career criminal.
And what made you think that it wasn't him acting in solus that did this then? What made you think he was sent?
Well, many reasons. The only thing he said when he was getting carted off, the only piece of information was he said, "Wee Jamie sends his regards." Now that turned out to be a red herring. There are two organised criminals who I know of called Jamie that might have a problem with me. It quickly emerged. I mean, within hours I was getting information from different sources, and it became clear within 24 hours that it hadn't come from either of these Jamies, but in fact come from someone else who was a known associate of this individual. This guy doesn't have the wherewithal to have planned this and execute it. Although the execution was botched, that was through a large part to a bit of bad luck, but the planning was quite meticulous. The individual who did organise it, I had been writing about this man for many years, but most recently in respect of his domestic violence, and he took great exception to this. So everything pointed towards him. There's all sorts of information, some of which is in the book and some of which is not.
Yeah. And there's no doubt, of course, of the guy who did it and being culpable because he actually perpetrated the actual attack. But what happened to him then when the police got hold of him?
Well, he was taken away, and again, it was quite frustrating because you would have thought that a man captured at the scene of an acid attack with a knife and a Royal Mail uniform could be prosecuted without much fuss. But in Scotland, the court system is, in my opinion, borderline dysfunctional, and it took 18 months. There was an initial trial 12 months after the attack, which collapsed due to perfectly foreseeable problem, which I told the Crown about. 6 months after that, there was a second trial, which concluded fairly obviously with a guilty verdict.
Was he in custody at this point?
Yes, he had been remanded. Right. So, but you know, when he committed the attack on me, he was still, or should still have been, serving a previous 15-year sentence for shooting a woman. He'd been let out early, not just once, but twice. The first time he'd been let out, he misbehaved and been put back in. Yet someone somewhere decided it was sensible to put him out again.
Right.
So when he came to my door in December 2015, he still had something like 8 months left of his original sentence to run, which is another problem. Not just the early release of people, there may be perfectly good reasons to do so, But again, in Scotland, it's the secrecy in which this is done.
Right.
The parole board decisions are kept secret. So for the point of sentencing, it's open and transparent. But the point of release, the public don't get to know.
Well, it's not just in Scotland, is it? We've got that War Boys case at the moment, which is a huge case, and that's kind of the tenure of that argument, isn't it?
Absolutely. That's quite timely because, you know, my case cannot be measured against the horrors of what that man has done to these women. But it's the same issue. It's this paternalistic parole board idea of where they know best. I think more often than not, it's not like the movies where they assess cases in any great detail. I think it's just a box-ticking exercise, largely.
Mm.
And I think there needs to be a lot more honesty and transparency. I think when people are sentenced, the judiciary ought to say, when is the earliest release date? To strip away the headline-chasing idea of 15 years, 20 years, life, which never really means it.
Sure.
I'm not advocating sort of hang them and flog them and, you know, throw away the key, but just be honest.
Yeah, I think the public have some difficulty with that, don't they? I think that's fair to say. Where somebody's given life and then actually it doesn't mean it at all.
Yeah, well, they brought in, following a European ruling, what they did with life sentences, set a minimum tariff in the UK, which is a good thing because it does exactly that. It tells you when the earliest the individual can be released. But for any other sentence, it's a mystery.
Yeah.
It's secret. So,
Your attacker got what then in terms of a jail sentence?
Well, the tweet that the judicial office sent after the sentencing was 15 years, but then you read the small print and it was 10 years in custody. But when you drill down into that detail, what it means is he can apply for parole after 5.
Right.
By this point of sentence, he'd spent a year in remand, so theoretically at least he could be out in 4 years from the point of sentence. So, which is quite different to the 15 years headline figure.
Indeed it is. And you are particularly aggrieved about Police Scotland and the Crown Office choosing not to really conduct any meaningful investigation into anybody else's role.
Yeah, I think I can understand it because there's budgetary issues. The crimes are categorised in terms of all sorts of factors, a sort of matrix-type system.
Mm.
I didn't die. I didn't suffer life-changing injuries, ultimately. The individual was caught. They got a prosecution and a conviction. But I do think from the outset it was apparent that there was no interest to look further than him, which I think was a mistake for a number of reasons. It was an acid attack, which are still pretty rare, and I think they should be tackled head-on by the authorities.
Mm.
But also, I think, without it's been about me as an individual, but when the press are, when organised crime deem it fair game to go after journalists in such an extraordinary way in Western Europe, it should be a red line. I think the authorities should have chucked everything at this.
Mm.
And for all they may not have got a conviction against the individual who sent him, they could have certainly done a lot more than they appeared to be doing.
So it's now all in your book, Acid Attack, A Journalist's War with Organised Crime. Do you think that book is going to make the situation any better, or is it a kind of a book in anger?
Well, the situation as in the likelihood of
a change happening,
yeah. No, I don't think it will make any difference whatsoever. I think the Crown, in particular, are very powerful. There's a bit like the whole parole board issue. There's very little transparency about the decisions they make in terms of prosecuting the deals that are done. Some of it's quite unsavoury. Some of it doesn't make much sense, but it's never explained. So I don't think so. I hope the book doesn't come across as angry. I think perhaps having spent 25 odd years writing about crime, reporting on crime and other matters, you try and stick to the facts and you don't want to opine or editorialise. So
This
book was different in that respect because some of it is about my views on these matters for what they're worth.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's angry. I think, well, I hope it's not anyway. And it's really just trying to explain some of the frustrations and some of the issues of the criminal justice system, which people seem to just accept. The authorities long recognise, but nothing seems to change.
And I guess all of this hasn't set you back to decide to write about dog shows instead of all of this, as you're doing your journalist careers.
Well, I mean, I do write all sorts of different subjects. It's not just organised crime, but I know I won't shy away from it. I'm not going to be cavalier. I'm not going to, you know, make some big stand and anything like that. But at the same time, if information comes to me that it's worthwhile, I'll do so. I mean, not long after the attack, within a few weeks, in fact, we had a story which would probably be of interest to your listeners in Spain, and it involved this family I mentioned earlier, the Lyons, who had connections to the Kinahan Irish family, which have got a foothold in Marbella. And just at that time, after my attack, there was the fairly audacious attack in the Dublin Hotel at the Boxing Weigh-In, where fake policemen came in with firearms. And the story I did not long after the attack was that this Irish organisation, with their foothold in Marbella, also in turn had a presence in Glasgow, connected to the Lyons. So I think that illustrates the global, the sort of easyjet organised crime, where 20, 30 years ago, there was much less of this international dimension.
Interesting stuff, sir. We appreciate your candidness and honesty. The book is called Acid Attack, A Journalist's War with Organised Crime. Russell Finlay, thank you so much. Appreciate it, sir.
Thank you, Bill.
All the best. Cheers, Russell.
Talk Radio Europe.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand-new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.